Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Not as always. We've had a couple of missed. Missed episodes is what we'll say. You know.
Well, I guess that's true because I had Matt on with me when you were traveling, and then you had Josh on with you last week. Great episode, by the way.
Thank you.
So, it's been a few weeks since we've actually sat down and talked to each other, which is weird.
A lot of text back and forth, okay, who do you got? Or who do you got? We're gonna talk about a super Japanese game. We're gonna talk about this really cool game that we're gonna talk again about later on. I have not listened to the spoiler edition of Horizon, of course, because I'm still finding time in my day to get back to Horizon. It's something I still want to do. Fortunately, a couple other games have sort of taken my free time away from me. A lot of traveling this weekend. So even though we had a long weekend, I feel like we didn't get a lot of time to play video games. I don't know about you, but I pretty much hid in a corner and opened the 3DS. And then when they saw the light on my face, they're like, no, you're going to be a good person and socialize with your family, in which I did.
Yeah, we did all the traveling, so I didn't play any games because I was away from everything for the whole weekend. But today I got a big chunk of gaming time in, which was awesome. And I played one of my most anticipated titles for 2017. It's an indie title called The Sexy Brutale or Brutale. Brutale? I don't know.
Do they say the name of the game?
They don't say the freaking name. All of it is subtitles. And I will say the soundtrack to this game is amazing. It's so good. And I don't normally notice soundtracks. normally it's just kind of background stuff. And every once in a while it'll be that's very, what's the word I'm looking for? Ambient. It fits the mood. They did a good job. But this one I've noticed every single puzzle has a theme song almost and really helps set the mood, and it changes with the time of day and stuff. It's just the soundtrack. I can't say enough about it. It's so, so good.
Cool. I'm just looking at their Steam page here, and it's developed by the same guys who did Deadlight, which is a side-scrolling zombie game, a Metroidvania style game. And I'm really digging the look of it. And I know we talked about this. You had mentioned we were talking. I asked what you were playing and trying to build the show notes. And you're saying this week's kind of a power week, where this game came out, and then next week two other games are coming out that you included on your most anticipated, I believe, when we talked about our game of the year.
Yeah, so I think it was episode 252 or 253, somewhere around there. We had a segment where we talked about basically what we were excited about for 2017 outside of the super big ones. So not including Mass Effect, not including Zelda, not including Horizon Zero Dawn, which have been the big titles that have really dominated our conversation so far this year. And there's a whole bunch of these little indie darling titles, and this is one of them, and it did not let me down at all. It was I think I played it for 6 hours straight, and I was a little bit disappointed at first because it seemed to be, I don't necessarily want to use the word easy because I feel like that's not right, but the puzzles went by fairly quickly, and basically the premise is you are in this mansion that is also a theater and casino, and this you're part of this masquerade ball, and basically all of the servants who are usually there to serve all the guests are actually killing the guests, and so you essentially have to find ways to intervene to prevent all of these deaths, and you're in this infinite time loop from noon until midnight on Saturday. So it is so reminiscent of Majora's Mask for me. I'm just yes, I love this resetting, because as you explore throughout the day, anytime you see either a servant or a guest, their movement is marked on your map. So you can actually open up your map and then put time forward or back, and it'll show you the movements of the guests and the servants that you've seen. Because the other mechanic is you can never be in the same room as a servant or as a guest. So you have to try to find ways to intervene where you're not actually in the room. And there's some really, really tricky kind of puzzles. So, for instance, there's this one, like the first couple of puzzles are basically like, stop the servants from killing the guests. And so you're like, okay, that's straightforward enough. Like, you know, either I have to, you know, set the guest off their path or set the servant off their path. But then the next one is actually one of the guests commits suicide. And you're like, well, how the hell am I supposed to intervene there without like talking to her? So it's like, it's this really kind of deep, cool, creepy, because it's all about murder. So super creepy, like puzzly kind of game. And oh my God, I love it so much.
Cool.
So, but like I said, the first few puzzles went by really, really quickly. And I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of crappy. But the further along in the game, the more of like the mansion you kind of unlock, because each guest that you save, you get the powers of their mask. So again, very Majora's Mask-y, right?
Yeah.
So as you're kind of going through, you're unlocking more and more powers, which enable you to open more and more doors. So the mansion or like your playing field gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So the longer you go, the further you might have to travel in this set amount of time in order to actually solve the puzzle and get everything done. So the first puzzle I think I solved in maybe like 20 minutes. And this last one that I just did took me like probably 2 hours just because I was like, okay, I think I did this and this and this and this. And I moved this over here and I did this and this and this and this. Okay. Damn it. They still died. Like, what did I miss? And then you have to go back and do it all over again and try to get the thing that you missed. So
interesting.
It's really, really cool. Really well done. And there's like a whole bunch of different ways that you have to like spy on different people, because basically what you have to do with each puzzle is you essentially have to watch the day play out. So you basically have to sit there and watch these people die and just like not do anything, because you have to know exactly what happens so that you can figure out how to intervene in some of these deaths, man. Oh, they are like cartoony and comic-y at the same time as being like really gruesome and like morbid.
Yeah, it looks, I love the art style. It reminds me of a very souped up version of Super Mario RPG, where it's the isometric 3D model along a what appears to be like a 2D background, but it kind of looks like some of this isn't a 2D background. But just a sampling of the soundtrack, yeah, it sounds very, very murder mystery, which is nice.
Yes.
And it sounds like a really fun little game. And I mean, you've been playing a lot of these little games where you're doing a lot of surveilling. In this case, it's a little dark. This is a little dark where you get to watch people die, and then you know, you have the power
but
to control time.
But then I go and save them, so yeah. I could just let them. But that's the other thing. I was going to say I could just let them die. After you save them the first time, it's very similar to Majora's Mask, where you save them the first time, you get their power, you rewind time, then they keep dying over and over again. And it's like, some of them are like gunshots, like some of them like a window breaks or glass breaks or a bell rings, or, you know, there's these big loud sounds that can be heard throughout. That one guy gets electrocuted, so like all the power goes like zap in the whole mansion. So it's like every single day at like 4 p.m. I'm like, I hear the gunshot and I'm like, oh, yep, sorry, dude, couldn't get you this time. Keep going. You actually have to listen to them die over and over and over. It's it's morbid. Well, I don't know why I'm laughing.
I don't know. It's
I'm maybe a terrible person.
You had a good time trying to save the people. And
well, that's the thing, like, you save one person per day. It's actually impossible to save all of them in one day. You just can't do it.
Oh, and what's the point in saving them if you can't save everybody? Is there an end game you're looking at?
I think what is going to happen is basically like, I'm going to get to the end of the game. I'm going to stop the big bad evil, because there's basically either something or someone that's like possessing the masks that everyone's wearing.
Oh.
So I feel like I'm going to get to the end. I'm going to stop whatever the big bad is. It's going to reset time and then no one's going to die.
Okay.
I think.
That would be nice. I mean, in a perfect world, it's getting awesome reviews. They've sort of, detailed a couple of them on the Steam page here, but not only that, it's the real metric is whether or not the users are enjoying it. And with a PC game, usually you have a mixed crowd, but it seems like everybody's just really enjoying the game. So that's really good news. And I'm glad it lived up to your expectations, because I know you were looking forward to this game, and I had no idea it was coming out. When you told me mm-hmm. it was out, I was like, crap, it's the end of April. Like, there are games know, right? coming out again. This is really cool, though. It looks neat, and it's a small little title, which is nice. Something that I've been craving. I was talking to Josh last week about having all these huge open world games, and I invited him on to talk about Persona 5, because let's be honest, like, the last thing we need here is another open world game to talk about. A huge sprawling RPG. And it was nice to talk about that, but I was like, I just need a game, like a nice break game, like something small, something I can beat. And I was originally looking at Telltale released their latest Let's Capitalize on the Next Big Thing, which is their Guardians of the Galaxy game, which is getting decent reviews. I haven't picked it up yet, but it seems kind of weird. Dude,
honestly, don't waste your money. This is so much better than any of the Telltale titles. Like,
good.
It is kind of similar in that it's very much like point and click adventure-y sort of thing. Like, there are little circles that highlight things that you can interact with in the room. There's like yellow circles that are collectibles, and you only have to collect them one time, which is nice. Like, once you pick something up, it's not like I have to go back and pick it up every single time. Mm-hmm. There's like yellow for collectibles. There's green for rooms that you can walk through. So usually they're hovering around doors. There's red for doors that are currently locked to you. And then there's blue for like points of interest, basically. And points of interest can be absolutely nothing, or it could be the answer to the puzzle. So it's like there's usually anywhere from two or three in a room all the way up to six or seven. And you just have to kind of point, click, explore, and observe, I guess, is the last one. So it's really, really interesting. The puzzles are challenging enough that I feel a sense of accomplishment when I get through it, but not so challenging that I've really, you know, kind of hit a wall at any point. It seems to kind of progress at a really, really good rate, although there is absolutely no like hint. Like, if you are stuck on a puzzle, the game does not hold your hand in any way, shape, or form. It's not like after resetting the day like five times, it's like, maybe you should go check the library at 2 p.m. It's like, no, if you don't get it, you don't get it, and you're just, you know, stuck. So there is kind of that little caveat to it, but the game is also interesting and intricate enough that it kind of points you in certain directions. And I don't want to give anything away, because I do think that there are a couple of like puzzle solutions that if I say too much, when you see it in the game, you'll be like, oh, that's what she was talking about. But the game does kind of direct your experience a little bit if you're paying attention. So there's kind of like stuff that happens and things that get marked on your map and stuff, things that move around and at different times of day and stuff, that if you're paying attention, it will kind of point you in a direction, but it doesn't smack you on the face with like a little helper fairy or something being like, try this. So
hey, listen.
Yeah, exactly. It's not handholdy at all.
Okay.
So yeah, I just, if what you're looking for, like I said, I think I played 5 or 6 hours today, and I have completed, I think, 10 of 18 achievements, although I'm sure there's probably some achievements for collecting things as well as story. So I've completed 10 of 18. I think I've kind of completed 5 of 6 chapters from what I can tell, from, because there's like a progress screen. So you get like little pictures of the guests that you have to save. And so that's your progress in the game. And so I've saved like 5 of those 6 portraits. So I still have one that's like a silhouette that I haven't saved yet. But I don't know if that's the end of the game or if then there's another kind of overarching puzzle on top of that. But so I'm kind of nearing the end. So I think it's probably somewhere between an 8 and 10 hour experience, depending on, you know, how anal you are about getting all the collectibles and, you know, like how quickly you solve the puzzles. But so far, at least, yeah, like I say, I've been in for about 5 or 6 hours and I'm probably 60 to 75% of the way through. So it's a nice chunk of content. it's really interesting. The art style and the music is amazing. So, yeah, I have not been disappointed by this game at all. And if you're looking for something that's a little bit, like, smaller and, you know, you can sink your teeth in and finish in a weekend or something, then this is for you.
That'd be nice. Haven't really had many experiences like that lately. So it sounds, and it looks really cool. Honestly, the graphics are my style of indie. Like, it hits a mark and it hits it well. It's not trying to do like the real world graphics like mm-hmm. Telltale does with their
it's super cartoony.
Yeah, like even seeing, like, I was watching some stuff for Guardians of the Galaxy and it's still not there. Like, I don't know what happened, but I was actually thinking, like, man, it'd be really great if we could do another segment on the show where we play a new episodic game as it comes out and mm-hmm. then spoil it and play it like a game club. But there really hasn't been a decent game that is worth doing that with.
Yeah, you know, we haven't
since
done
Life
that.
Is Strange.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, since Life is Strange is the last one that mm-hmm. we actually did. So, and that was a long time ago now. I was still in Halifax, so that was a really long time ago.
Yeah, it was probably over 2 years ago, and you know, it's getting decent reviews, probably more so than Batman did, and more so than Walking Dead has. But I don't know. It's just I think the reason we never did it after Wolf Among Us is because we did the Telltale formula, and it's like, okay, they're just going to keep releasing more like this. Mm. Let's check something else out. And Life is Strange, I think, did that for us. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that studio does next. It's not, I don't think it's an episodic game, but it's based on vampires, which is nice. Can't remember the last time I played vampire stuff.
You mean...
Don't Telltale? Nod. No.
Oh, no. Okay.
You've seen the game. It's like called Vampire or Vamp.
Yeah, that's Vampire. The one. It's where you're like a doctor or something, right? In like Victorian England sort of thing. And you have to basically sniff out healthy victims. But you also can't choose anyone who's too high profile. Am I thinking of the right title?
Yes, that's
okay,
the one.
Yeah.
I think it comes out in May.
I think so too. It's definitely a 2017 title, but I can't remember exactly when in 2017. But I also I pre-ordered whichever one is coming out next week, and I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head. But Outlast 2 is Little Nightmares. That's it. Little Nightmares is the one that looks really Tim Burton-y, and I'm really excited about. And then Outlast 2 is coming soon too.
Yeah.
Which is also on my list. Which is weird. Yeah.
Did you play Outlast? I thought you...
No, I watched you and went, hell no.
Well, then why would you look forward to Outlast 2? It's just more of that.
And I think we talked about this in our anticipated episode, but right. Basically this is the one where you're like a journalist and you are in a town, right?
Oh, it's more open.
Yeah, so it's more open. You're not confined to, like, the insane asylum sort of thing or whatever it was. So I feel like just that one step of, like, it's, like, that little bit less claustrophobia. Like, I'm not stuck in a building. I have a little bit of freedom. Just makes it so that I'm not... Well, it's the same reason I hated Five Nights at Freddy's, and that scared the shit out of me, is because you're stuck in this little room, and you can't escape. You can't leave.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can't, like... That level, that extra level of, like, containment in a video game just makes me go, ugh, just from the very beginning. And I feel like with Outlast 2, since you're kind of outside, it'll be a little bit better for me from the very beginning.
Well, I mean, I look forward to hearing how that goes, because I don't think I'll be going... Well, I don't think I'll be going near... Like, I couldn't even play... Resident Evil 7, and I have Lou and Bob from Zombies Ate My Podcast telling me this is the best Resident Evil game they've ever made. And it's like, sure, I bet that's the case, but they've changed it from an action game to a straight up horror game. And I know a lot of folks were upset when they did the opposite, but for me, I'm not super into horror experiences. I really like action shoot 'em up type stuff, and I don't know, like, I've seen some people playing Resident Evil 7. It looks scary as shit. No, thank you. I have limited time to play games, and I do not want to spend that time almost pooping my pants. Almost.
Yeah, and I think that because I like horror experiences, but I tend to like horror movies.
Yes.
And that's because they move themselves along. I find if I'm ever in like a first person view in a horror game, I just won't take the step. I'll just stand there at the front door and go, well, this is an experience. Like, you want me to go where? Into that room that says, you shall die with blood on the wall? Nope. I'm just going to stand here in the doorway and wait till, you know, I don't know, somebody comes to rescue me.
Yeah. No, I'm not super looking forward to Outlast 2, but I think that it is a good whirlwind of games coming out in the next few weeks, especially if you're into the indie stuff, because I think Little Nightmares looks fantastic in a similar fashion to the Sexy Brutale. Can we just decide what it is? Is it
Let's just call it Brutale.
Yeah, because the Brutale just sounds like we're making fun of the way the French language. It just doesn't sound right. Maybe the E is silent, so the Sexy Brutale. Anyways, the Little Nightmares has that, it aims for that mark in terms of its art style, and I think it nails it, which is the, like you said, the Tim Burton, similar to how South Park, kind of the South Park games, it aims for that goal and hits it spot on. Like, they have made that cartoon into a video game. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. And the other one was what? It was like Edith Finch.
So. Yeah, and I don't think that one has a release date yet. So
I think that one's out next week as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So
there was one of them that I looked at that didn't have. I added them all to my wish list though, so I'm sure Steam won't miss sending me an email. But
no, it's pretty spot on when it wants your money.
But they're all pretty much, I think, between $20 and $25, and that's Canadian. So I mean, if you're looking at American, you're probably looking at $15 to $20 for these experiences. And I mean, I can't speak for all the ones that I'm really anticipating, but at least this one, the Sexy Brutale, is fantastic, and I 100% recommend it to anyone and everyone. Like, I don't think that there's really anyone who's going to look at this game and go, "Oh, I don't want to play that." And I played it on PC, and the one downside I will say is I found the control a little bit annoying. Like, it's left and right click, so you right click and hold to move, and then you like left click to go to interact with stuff, and then but sometimes if you have items or something, then you have to press Z, and you have to also press X to do things. So it's like, it's not WASD to move, or you know, any of the kind of controls you would think it would be. It's like Z and X and shift, which is just a weird place to put my hand. And then sometimes I was doing stuff like I meant to move, so I'd go to click to move, but then I'd accidentally like walk back up the stairs I just came down, or you know, stuff like that, because those little round circles, like I said, those are the things that if you're standing in them, when you click, then it'll just do the thing. So that is great sometimes when you're going like inspecting a whole bunch of like points of interest in a row. But if you're like trying to actually navigate the house sometimes I found myself going like up and down the same set of stairs like four times. I'm like, you're wasting time, stupid game. Like, I clearly just misclicked.
Now, do you feel like maybe it's a controller-based game and they haven't quite mapped it, right?
I think it is, because I believe it's also available on at least Xbox, if not Xbox and PlayStation. So it is available on consoles. So I think that experience might be a little bit better, might be what it's meant for. It could even be meant to have a controller like on the actual PC, but I was playing it with mouse and keyboard, and the keyboard mapping, or like the key mapping, wasn't the greatest. But I mean, once I got used to it, it was kind of okay. But still, I was misclicking 6 hours into it. So, but yeah, like I say, I think it just is mapped for a controller, and I was using it on a keyboard, and I looked in the options and couldn't find a place to change it. So, it is what it is. But I mean, it's a tiny little problem with an indie game, and that cost me $20, so I can't really get that mad, because the rest of the experience is so great. So
I'm looking forward to checking it out. It looks like a lot of fun.
So speaking of things that you're checking out, how is Mass Effect treating you?
I want to know. So I've been talking about Mass Effect for the last, well, evidently it's been out for a month, which is crazy to think about. I want to know, I kind of want to know how much have you played and what's keeping you into it, away from it. Like, because I don't think we've really had like your, in the last, since I guess it came out, we really haven't had your thoughts on what you think. And then let me give you a break, because you had mentioned your throat was sore. I'll toss it to you in a second. But where I'm at with the game is I think I've tolerated its problems. And we had a couple of folks on Twitter reach out to us and kind of say like, hey, it's not that bad a game. And it's true. It's really not that bad a game. It's a fine Mass Effect game. And they've done a good job of
they've done a job
and no, they literally did. They took what the Mass Effect trilogy, what was great in the Mass Effect trilogy, and tried to bring it to the new platform from a different team. And I think that shows in that the, you know, the what makes Mass Effect great is in this game, but it's kind of it's been changed. It's been warped into a different game. Like, I think the open world mechanics of the game really tarnish the great pieces in this very large product. And a lot of the side stuff that you get to do in this game now, to what I've done in the past with Mass Effect, the original trilogies, I would do everything in the game, every side mm-hmm. quest, every conversation, everything. And that amounted to, I think, maybe probably a 40 to 60 hour playthrough. Mm-hmm. But I felt when you were doing everything, you were just getting new and interesting dialogue with your character. And in this, because it's an open world, there's a lot of filler. And they even call it filler because they break down the quests, you know, from the top of the tier is these are your main priorities. And then the bottom mm-hmm. of the tier is tasks. They literally don't sugarcoat it.
Okay, but they don't actually call it these are our filler quests.
Well, I think if you're calling them tasks, you're kind of like, that's one step away from calling them chores. I mean,
that's true.
Most of the time, those tasks are very, very optional. I will mention that. You do not have to do them, but they are scattered around the map in a way that when you are out doing quests that you might want to do, you will accidentally or come across like a pocket of tasks that you can do. And I think for me, as a person who sees, you know, dots on my mini map, it's like, oh, well, while I'm here, I can go do this and this and this. And then before you know it, you forget what you've been doing. And, you know, honestly, that thought has been echoed on Twitter when Val and I were talking today about what we think about Mass Effect. And I got about 70 plus hours into it. I am enjoying it. I've hit the, you know, point of no return dialogue that basically says, like, hey, this is the last mission. You're going to get to play after. You're going to get to play before. But once you start it, you're kind of stuck in that mode until you finish it.
Right.
Which is a very cryptic way of saying, I don't know, Google what you need to finish before you do the final mission, which I did. Not as a spoiler, but more as a, what is it going to lock me out of once I finish this mission? And there's a great article that I'll link to, which is, I think, a Prima Guide link. And it basically, in non-spoilery terms, lists out the things you need to do. And there's about six of them, most of which you'll probably have done. So right now I'm at the process of kind of cleaning things up, mainly just getting the outpost set up and, you know, making the planets 100% viable and getting the loyalty missions finished and whatnot. But the game's still, like, plagued with bugs. So that patch, I don't know if you played since the patch came out.
I have not.
Okay, because it's fixed a lot of the glaring animation issues that were present very early on in the game. So mm-hmm. I think if you noticed, are you playing as default Sarah Ryder, or did you change
her? No, I customed her.
Okay, so if you custom her, I think they might just change a little bit of the eyes, because the eyes might be a little wonky. And I think if you played as default, they do change some things, which I did. So they kind of made some subtle changes that are huge improvements. But I think you'll notice in the animation side that they've cleaned that up a little bit. So when she talks and emotes, it's not necessarily as sort of goofy.
I did see like a before and after, and it wasn't of her. It was one of the other characters. Mm-hmm. And I did like two little GIFs of what it looked like before and after. And it was a huge change. And I couldn't believe it because, like you say, the only thing that they changed in the animation is the eyes. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, huh, I didn't realize like how much of an impact that just the eyes had on how crazy some of these characters look. But it makes total sense.
Yeah, no, all the eyes are the what is it the old proverb,
windows,
the eyes
to the soul.
There it is. I was gonna pull it right out, but I didn't want to sound kind of like a hipster, or I can't think of the right word, but anyways, yes, the eyes are the windows to the soul. And clearly before that patch, Dud 75 saying Addison in the chat, you know, Addison was the main character you ran into at the beginning, my face is tired bit. And they did a lot of work on her character specifically, because you're constantly coming back to her, you're constantly seeing her. She's not a one-off character, and they've really addressed that. So in the first patch, in the first 2 weeks, they did address some of the glaring issues, but also in the chat room, they're talking about Movie Night, which is a quest that you do throughout the campaign. And it's basically just like, get this, get that, but it's a lot of like interacting with your crew. So it is one of those, feels like chores, but still a lot of fun to do. And a bug hit me at the end of that where, you know, I don't want to spoil it or anything, but it was just, I was watching this moment. It's like, oh man, this is a really good scene. This is a perfect example of the Mass Effect charm in this game. And there are moments near the end game that really highlight the fact that they really wanted to make a game that the original trilogy players would love. And I think it's there. It's in there. And, but it's just, it's, I don't know, maybe it was rushed. It was plagued. It's plagued by development. I don't know, but there are these moments that make you think, man, I'm really glad I did that Krogan mission because that was hilarious and had the Mass Effect charm. But there are other times when, crap, I've been running around this planet, this desert planet, you know, killing faceless bug aliens for the last hour and have had, you know, nothing happen. So I'm looking forward to... So do you think,
from the sounds of it, it sounds like they just almost, like, bit off more than they could chew? Like, they went too big, and so all of the kind of key... like, I don't necessarily want to say emotional, because that's not maybe the right phrasing, but just, like, the kind of key moments get a little bit lost in this really, really big Mass Effect world.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, and there's been a lot of sentiment on the internet about how people are saying, like, clearly BioWare needs to not make open world games. And that's, I'm not going to be one to say like a developer shouldn't do something, but I think from Dragon Age Inquisition and Andromeda, there's this theme going on that they're not making their best game because they're trying to make a game that they think people want, which is an open world game. And I don't think that's the case anymore. I know a lot of folks want to play one game for the rest of their lives, but you know, that's what Ark is for. That's what Minecraft's for. These are different games. And I think having a beginning and an end with minimal side quests and stuff that aren't filler is a good thing. You know, and I want to get back to that. But I think they tried to make this big, huge game. And, you know, if you put blinders on and you go through and just do the main stuff and the stuff that interests you, surely, yeah, you'll enjoy yourself and you'll have a good time. The combat is still really fun. I'm really enjoying the combat. And like I said, the character moments near the end of the game that I've experienced have been phenomenal, like top-notch Mass Effect stuff. I'd mentioned last week that I did one of the loyalty missions.
Loyalty?
Thank you. And it was one of the best Mass Effect missions I've ever played. Way better than anything I played in the Mass Effect trilogy as well. It was comical, it had heart, it had character, it was amazing. And unfortunately, it was also plagued with a couple of like graphical glitches that got in the way of that. But still having fun. I'm probably going to have finished it by next week because I think I'm in cleanup mode now in terms of some side stuff. But I want to know for you, you've had it since the beginning as well. And how much have you played? Well, you said you haven't played the new patch. So,
yeah, I actually haven't touched it since the last time we talked about it.
Now, why is that? Is it just didn't grab you or?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not 100% sure because when we played the multiplayer, I loved the combat. I feel like it didn't grab me the way that the original trilogy did. And it's funny because when I played the original trilogy, I started in 2. I didn't even start with the original Mass Effect. I played 2, went back to 1, played 2 again, and then played 3. So it was basically just like... actually, I think it was John, Icon Master, who we've had on the show previously, he sent me a tweet and said, like, I just picked up my Xbox 360, so this is how long ago it was. And I was just like, so, guys, you know, like, first Xbox, what's a good thing? What should I pick up and play? And he was like, oh my God, if you've never played Mass Effect, pick up Mass Effect. So that's what I just picked up too. Cause I said, well, do I have to play the original in order to get into it? And he's like, no, you can jump right into 2. So that's what I did. And, so, I mean, that really grabbed me, but Mass Effect 2 was you know, like really jumped right into it, right? Because you'd already had all the setup of Mass Effect 1. So with Andromeda, I feel like it's the game I wanted it to be. It's like what I had wished that No Man's Sky was, which is basically like space exploration, seeing a whole bunch of really super cool planets, but with an actual story behind it, because No Man's Sky just flopped. And so like Mass Effect was everything that I wanted it to be, but I think that it's just maybe like either not the right time or I picked it up on the wrong platform, because I picked it up on PC and I feel like once I finished Horizon Zero Dawn, had Mass Effect been on my console, I probably would have jumped right into it because I was really enjoying the break from my computer because everything that I play, like, consistently daily, World of Warcraft, Hearthstone, and Overwatch are on my PC. So I was really loving getting up, going and sitting on the couch and having that couch gaming experience. And then I didn't have that with Mass Effect. It was another thing I had to do on the computer. So I found I was getting distracted from it a lot. I was either saying like, oh my God, okay, I'm sitting in front of my computer. I should be doing A, B, C, D, E, F things before I can actually get to playing Mass Effect. And yeah, so I feel like there was that. And then there was also just the choice of platform in general. I feel like the player base, or at least the players that I would play with, are very much split over whether they're playing it on PlayStation or whether they're playing it on PC. And so as a result, some of the people that I played Mass Effect with previously, because the multiplayer really pulled me in, were like, it was you, but then it was also Josh and it was Val, and they're not on this platform. So I haven't had those messages from people constantly saying like, hey, come on, jump in, let's play some Mass Effect. And I really don't know, like, it was so long ago that I don't remember, and it could just be because, like, I only had the one console, I didn't have a PlayStation, I didn't have a great gaming PC. Like, was Mass Effect only on the Xbox, or is that just, like, the only platform that I had?
So, Mass Effect 1 was Xbox exclusive, and 2 onwards was multi-platform.
Okay, so I wonder then if, like, everyone was just on Xbox, because you had the thing in Mass Effect where you could carry your save game forward, yes, right? And then that carried your character forward. So I'm wondering if people had just played Mass Effect on Xbox, and so that's where they were used to playing it. So that's where they played their trilogy, and that fit really well with just the platform that I had. Mm-hmm. But then this time there's been, you know, it's the start of a new franchise. I don't know if they've said trilogy, but...
Yeah, I saw some interesting comments from people. Like, the game obviously hasn't been doing as great as people, as EA would probably hope. I mean, I don't have actual numbers, but I think it's safe to say that, you know, they're not happy, probably. But it sets up it as a trilogy, and that was something I wanted to say. Like, I am, again, I like this game as a complete game, like as from beginning to end, it's a good Mass Effect product, and what can surely be, you know, the low point of a new trilogy. I think if BioWare were to have another chance at Mass Effect Andromeda and give us a sequel, which is clearly, you know, within the story supports continuation because there are plot points left off. There's interesting nods to the original trilogy and how the original trilogy ended. And, you know, they don't solve those endings, but they look at them and say, hey, that happened, you know. Not in a way that it says, you know, A, B, or C, but that it's just the story is really well put together while nodding the previous games, giving you a new galaxy, not only to explore, but to survive. And again, I haven't done the final mission, so there's probably stuff that is coming that is more story oriented, that's going to set up more of a sequel, but I haven't done it yet.
I would hope so.
Yeah, there's probably like a stinger at the end that's like dun dun dun, you know, but
cliffhanger.
Exactly, like look forward to the next Mass Effect game. And I think BioWare is kind of notorious for coming out with a game, not doing so well, and then trying to find a way to fix that game while addressing the issues in a sequel. When you look at Dragon Age 2 and Dragon Age Inquisition, that's a clear example of creating a product that didn't live up to people's expectations and then meeting those meeting and beating those expectations with Inquisition, and trying to find a middle ground. So, but yeah, I agree. In terms of the Xbox, I picked up Mass Effect on the Xbox because that was my only option. And then because of the character transfers, I was like, well, I have to keep playing on Xbox. And I saw the PC as a chance to change platforms, but it is a beefy game. Like, I mean, I almost thought to myself, man, maybe I should return this and get it on consoles because my PC is lagging in certain areas that could probably be better, and is affecting gameplay. There is some chugging that I'm not too fond of.
Well, and and I've had that exact same experience as well, is that my PC is not handling it as well as I imagine a console would. Just because my PC now that I actually do the gaming on, like my streaming computer is quite beefy, but my gaming computer is not. So I feel like, there were some points where, you know, like it was a graphically intense situation, or sometimes even in combat where I'm playing and all of a sudden my computer's like super lag and I'm like, oh man. And not even in multiplayer, like in actual just single player gameplay, and it's totally because it's not the game's fault. It's a beefy game. It's totally my hardware. So and I don't think that played too much into the reason it didn't grab me, but I just feel like the start of the story just didn't really kind of rope me in, and the timing of it, there was so much else going on when it came out that I was just kind of there were other things going on. So I think I will get to it, but it didn't grab me the way the original trilogy did. And I think that that's partly because there's just more going on now in my life in terms of gaming. Like I mentioned, you know, three games off the top, and I didn't even mention Heroes, but you know, like the Blizzard gaming right now is huge. Like I do shows specifically about two of them, and I play four of them regularly. So I mean, like, just Blizzard in general has really grabbed my time and attention, and that's why I've absolutely loved some of these smaller indie things, is because, you know, I can take a day away from the, you know, competitive gaming that I do in Blizzard titles, and I can just take a few hours and I can play a cool little indie title and I can absolutely love it. But, like, to try to find, like, I think just Mass Effect Andromeda is so daunting to me because I know that it's another, like, 50-plus hour experience. And I'm just like, I just finished Zelda and Horizon Zero Dawn. I don't really want to play something else. It's this big, huge, open world experience. So
yeah, and I mean, I'm...
It's really unfortunate for Mass Effect because I don't think it's a bad game. I think it just... I kind of heard through the grapevine that it was getting a patch to fix some issues, and I was like, fine, I'll just play after the patch. And then I never went back to it, so...
Yeah, my suggestion, honestly, right now for you is definitely don't let it slip through your fingers while it's still in everyone's sort of, you know, front of mind. Because eventually there will be so many games coming out that it will get left behind. And I, for one, know how hard it is to go back to something like an open world game after you know, going to different
months
experiences.
Months have passed, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you don't have time to go back to it right now, waiting for the next patch might be advisable. Like I said, there are still some minor glitches that are present. I don't know if they're going to be able to fix them all, but honestly, I think that another quality of life patch may come in handy, especially if you've waited this long to play it. But also, there's a story moment where I don't believe you've gotten to yet. You just got off the first planet, right?
I don't want to say too much, and I'm also at the same time trying to remember where I left off.
Have you met the, you've met the one set of aliens, right, that you...
Yes.
Yeah. So there's...
So I did the first planet, I got back to my ship got to its destination, some stuff happened, and then I started down to the next planet. But I think I like saved right when I landed on the next planet. So I haven't actually done anything on my first like colonization attempt, I guess, maybe. Sure. I can't even remember 100%. I know I was investigating a murder and something else.
Okay. So, so the desert planet of, what looks like a desert planet, it's kind of like a Utah planet. I don't know. It's like it's got like a little bit of plant life, but it's a lot of like rocks and cliffs and water and stuff. Eos or Eos or whatever they call it. And
yeah, that's the planet I'm at, but I think I just landed on it and sure. saved and left, so I haven't actually explored it at all.
So there's some story beats coming up, playing through the first bit of that that planet, and then there's some new characters that are introduced that I think showcases one of the first best moments of Mass Effect okay. Andromeda. So getting to that point might be, you know, the make it or break it point where you'll come back to me and say, like, I really like that and I want to keep going, or Ryan, that was kind of meh and I think I'm going to put this down until they have some later. Stellar DLC or something.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. I think, yeah, it's come in a crowded time, and as you can see, there's been casualties on both sides. Like, you really yeah. played and enjoyed Horizon. I've barely touched the surface. I think if you were to take our experiences, they're kind of mirrored, you know, where mm-hmm. you've barely scratched yeah, Mass Effect.
We just picked different games to kind of focus on in that open yeah. world kind of space, and mm-hmm. I think it's unfortunate for you that you haven't seen Horizon, and you think it's unfortunate for me that I haven't seen Mass Effect. Like, these are really great experiences, and just because of the timing around their releases and other stuff that's been going on, it's too much to play, even when it's our job to play, you know, like
yeah. So. Well, in terms of covering everything great and new, I think we've checked the box on that one in terms mm-hmm. of doing a podcast. So I recommend folks who love Mass Effect to continue playing the game. And I would love at a point to be able to discuss the sheer insanity of continuing this trilogy by sidestepping one of the most controversial endings in video games. I think having that conversation eventually will be really cool. And I think there's a lot of space to do that later on mm-hmm. once, you know, as they add DLC, because that's yeah. something that BioWare is...
Well, I'd say, yeah. I mean, as they add DLC and then also as they add more games, right? Like, sure. if this is not the first, or if this is the first of many, or at least the first of two... then that obviously is going to take place later on in time, and the more time that goes by, the closer we get to the ending of the original trilogy. So I'm sure that that's gonna, you know, or like, I guess, sorry, so we've already passed the ending point yeah. of the first trilogy, but for travelers from Earth to get to us still is going to take some time. You guys know what I mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird science, and I was thinking about mm-hmm. this. This is not at all spoilery, but it's just more like me theory crafting, because when you go forward 600 years into the future, that is an amount of time that a civilization can do something of immense technological prowess, right? So,
oh, absolutely.
Depending on the ending in Mass Effect 3, whether you know, spoilers for a 5-year-old game, you decided to destroy the Reapers and everyone lived happily ever after, or you merged and everyone became cybernetic ever after, those are endings that can kind of lead to, hey, remember those guys we sent to Andromeda? We're part robot now. Let's like super robot jump to Andromeda. But it took like maybe 550 or 601 years to come up with the technology. And then there's the sequel or the DLC is like, yo, Joker's here and I got bionic legs and I'm married to this sick robot. Back, you know, original trilogy's back. I don't know. That was just something that kept popping into my head. Obviously, that hasn't happened because it's ridiculous, and they definitely shouldn't do that. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm
just picturing Joker hopping on his robot legs from planet to planet, which I yeah. think is hilarious.
There's got to be some sort of fan art out there. If there isn't, please make it. Send it into the show.
Somebody do it. Yeah. So you have one more experience. Speaking of things that we were really anticipating for 2017, you have one experience that you have that I haven't, and this is ukulele. So how yep. much time have you actually had in game so far?
Just a couple hours. But I think that's enough to kind of know that this game is exactly what was promised. It was kickstarted, did very well. It's by the guys who created Banjo-Kazooie, basically former Rare platformer creators, Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Donkey Kong 64. Now, I should love know that this game. Okay, perfect. So you are familiar with the Rare platformer, big yes. fan.
Oh yeah, yeah,
this is that. they have made Banjo 3, or whatever the hell they were going to call it, except with new characters. And the question that keeps popping into my mind, I'm enjoying it. A lot of reviewers didn't quite like it because they created basically Banjo 3 as if it was the year 2000. But as we all know, it's the year 2017. And I don't know. I'm enjoying it for what it is because it is what it was promised to be, which is this spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie. And, you know, it's got everything from big open worlds where you're just collecting, solving puzzles. You're not guided. You're sort of just sent in a direction to go. And Dud in the chat room is saying there was a 3. It's called Nuts and Bolts. I'm talking about, like, straight up, we're not going to try and modernize Banjo-Kazooie. They literally created the sequel to Banjo-Kazooie, and it's in all of its problems. They haven't modernized anything, so there's no voice acting. It's still the dialogue and the, you know, the weird
yes.
sounds. And again, to me, it's what was promised, therefore they delivered. But a lot of folks seem to think that they were going to get something a little different. Now,
yeah.
I don't know how you feel about that, but I think that when they would have been damned if they did and damned if they didn't, if they hadn't created this perfect spiritual successor. Although that being said, I would have loved a mini map because I constantly get lost in these worlds. They're not big, but they're kind of, you kind of forget where you're going. Yeah, and they're twisty. You forget where you're going, and you forget, oh, I've been here. I've already collected everything in this area. I need to find a new place to collect pages or whatever the hell they're called. but it's a, you know, it's like a $45 game, Canadian, so it's, I think it's like 40 American. It's not full priced, but it is, you know, probably a little bit more than what people would expect. But I think it's a big world. Like, there's a lot to do in it. And I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of it. I think I'm in world one, and I'm just getting a lot of warm, fuzzy feelings. Just, you know, remembering, oh, man, I remember when I really, really liked Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie and just loved playing those games on N64. This is going to bring back those memories. And if you've been looking for that while getting it in an HD, beautiful, cartoony package, you're going to want to check out Ukulele for sure.
Well, I look forward to hearing more once you actually get a chance to kind of go a little bit further down that road. But I guess this is as good a time as any to thank our patrons. Thank you guys so much for supporting us over on patreon.com/thegamersin. We have a post up there right now that I'm going to link in the chat room, which basically is the post for our game night, which is going to be tomorrow. That is April 20th. We're going to be streaming over on twitch.tv/JossPlays. Come and hang out with us. We're going to be playing some sort of multiplayer something with you guys. And I think that right now Smite Kart is winning, whatever that is. Apparently they made Mario Kart in Smite or something. So even if you guys aren't going to be playing with us, feel free to tune in and laugh along with our shenanigans. If you are a patron of the Gamers Inn and you want to join in, make sure that you have joined our Discord at bit.ly/TGI Discord so that we can pull you in for all of the fun Smitey cart times, maybe. If not, we will potentially be playing Depth, which is also fun because then we get to eat each other with sharks. Yay!
It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's been a while since we played a lot of these titles. So I'm looking forward to it. I always love playing stuff with the community. So make sure you guys come and check it out. Again, that's patreon.com/thegamersin. Which brings us to our topic of the week this week, which is basically the development of video games and why it's super interesting. So I don't know if you guys have seen this, but I tweeted it out. I think it was actually yesterday. Basically what happened was there was a 45-minute documentary about how Horizon Zero Dawn was made. And part of that documentary was this little GIF that I think Kotaku originally posted. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of explaining how they draw environments. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm a gamer. I'm not a game developer. So when I saw it, it was like light bulb moment. Like, oh, of course that's how they do it. But it was basically explaining that, like, as your character turns, things in front of you are rendered and things behind you disappear. And it was this really cool, like, basically, how do they make this big open world with this seemingly infinite view distance? And, you know, like, how do they actually do this? So a lot of people shared it and were like, oh, wow, this is super cool, myself included. And game developers kind of like, because, and I know somebody actually tweeted this at me and said, oh, yeah, welcome to some blah, blah, blah. And I was like, those are words I don't know. I'm just going to ignore you, random negative internet person. Mm. And so, but apparently I just shrugged it off as it like, yeah, whatever, like. But apparently this was happening all over the internet. Anyone who shared this GIF was getting, like, such a hard time because game developers, who you'd think would be super interested in us being super interested in what they do, were just like, oh, yeah, that's been around since 1982 or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, my God, guys, why do we have to be such assholes to each other all the freaking time?
Yeah, I mean, You nail it on the head. Like, I went, so I graduated from computer science. So I went to school with what we lovingly like to refer to as these type of people, assholes. and when they program splain and say, like, oh, that's like, and that's a terrible thing. I shouldn't have said that, but terrible pun. But it's like, not everybody knows what this stuff is. And I went to computer.
Well, not everybody knows everything about everything. And no. I know when I saw it, so I went to school for geographic information systems, mm-hmm. which is why I thought this particular little snippet GIF was so cool, is because it was very reminiscent of like 3D rendering that I did when I was map making. So, I mean, just the parallels there to, you know, my schooling to how they do it in video games, I thought was super freaking cool. And I mean, like I said, once I saw it, it made perfect sense. And they were talking a lot about like how they do things. And, you know, when they're far away, they're less detailed. And the closer you get, the more detail it loads in. And that's how they do these big environments, which is exactly how we did like big, huge maps. It's like you have layers upon layers and they get more detailed the more you zoom in, because there's no point if you can't see all that detail, there's no point in rendering it. It makes perfect sense. But I had never thought of it in a video game sense before. So sorry, Ryan, I kind of cut you off a little bit there.
I think that it makes perfect sense. Like, it's weird. Not all programmers are like this, and we can certainly apply it to everybody. Not all people are like this. When someone says this is really cool, and you think, oh well, I do this every day, you know, it's not cool because I do it every day. And when I look at this GIF, and I went to school for computer science, we never did anything like this. I never got quite that advanced, but I look at this and like, this is really cool. And it feels like something I should have known about, having been really interested in video games and loving behind the scenes stuff. I'm sure I've seen something like this before, but this is the first time it's actually been put in front of me in such a
visual and also simplified way.
Thank you.
It's very easy to understand. You can look at it and go, oh, yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
It's just weird that, and you're right, like weird that people, actually this Polygon article, you know, puts it out there real, real well. And I think that people on Twitter were looking at this article and getting really upset with Polygon for like, why are we highlighting developers that are being assholes? It's like, I guess, but I think it's important to call people out when they're being
assholes.
Exactly. And I think this GIF is really cool. I think the documentary, I love, love, love behind the scenes stuff. I will watch behind the scenes stuff, especially of a game I love. So that's why I thought, well, it does not surprise me that Jocelyn has checked out this GIF, if not the whole documentary and the articles that support it.
I haven't actually watched the whole documentary yet. I just saw somebody share that, and I was like, holy hell, that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool, and I think it's important.
And it would have been cool no matter what game it was. It just happened to also be Horizon Zero Dawn. I didn't even realize when I shared the GIF, I didn't even realize that it actually came from a documentary. I literally just saw the GIF, went, that's cool.
Yeah. And I think that when you look at this, you want people to be excited about how games are developed, because maybe someone doesn't know what this fulcrum, I already forgot what the second word was, like Fulcrum Crossing or something. If they didn't know what it was, they know what it is now, and that might interest them to go and learn programming, learn engine development, get into making games. And I mean, you don't want your industry to die off. You want people to be interested in what you're doing. And alienating the people that are interested is kind of like saying to them, we don't want you if you didn't already know everything about game development. And yeah, that's not how the real world works. You need experience. And you're not going to get experience if you think that most of your teachers are assholes. Luckily, people who are teachers most of the time aren't like this. These are the folks that just, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
This whole attitude I find so weird and interesting because I know, like, I've had so far two kind of out there careers. The first one being geographic information systems. It was very, when I went to school for it, it was very cutting edge. Not a lot of people were doing it. And that eventually is what drove me out of the industry, is because I just got sick and tired of trying to explain to people that my job was actually worthwhile and worth paying for. But so there was that, and then now I'm doing podcasting, which again, I spend a lot of time explaining, like, air quotes, internet radio to, you know, my parents' generation, and even some of my generation have no idea what podcasting is, and they're like, wait a minute, you just sit and talk and people listen and pay you. And I'm like, yes.
Yep.
Basically in a nutshell. So, I mean, I've been parts of industries where people are intrigued, and I feel like game development is another one of these industries. And anytime someone has asked me about my job, it's always been, you know, like, oh, yeah, okay, I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and these are the really cool applications of the things that I do, or, you know, these are the kind of people that I reach and the kind of communities that I create, and I'm always very open and excited to talk about what it is that I do. So then for me to see somebody be interested in game development and have game developers themselves like kind of poo-poo that interest, it just seems so weird to me and so foreign. Like, why wouldn't you want to explain what you do? Aren't you proud of it? Aren't you excited?
Exactly. It's very self-deprecating in a way that they don't realize they're doing it. And this can be applied to not just video games, but pretty much every unique industry across the board, because we've all been there where we don't understand something that others think should be common knowledge. And I think that when you look at this, it's one of those examples of, yeah, you're taking a magnifying glass and you're getting right up in there and looking at that pile of shit and being like, yeah, this is a pile of shit. And there are a lot of developers out there, and the article does include some of them that are saying basically what we've just echoed, and also the fact that it's really cool that a GIF of a common programming practice has reached, you know, 1,800 comments on Reddit and is the top post in the general GIFs Reddit, which is usually filled with
cats,
boobs, internet pancakes, stuff like that. So the fact that this made it to the top of that very hefty stack is kind of impressive, and we should be happy about that. So take that, internet pancakes.
So yeah, if you guys haven't seen, if you're like me and haven't actually seen the documentary, there is a 45-minute documentary on the making of Horizon Zero Dawn, and it does go into some of these little, like, kind of interesting how we do it background game dev type thing. So if that's something that you think would interest you, then I highly recommend you go check it out, because I know that that is something that I will be doing. And because I think it's super interesting. And I think, you know, we spend so much time on this side of it, playing the game, that seeing the other side of it, the how they do it, how they make it, that's just super interesting to me. So you guys should all go and check it out. I think that's going to do it for us this week. But before we go, I just wanted to remind everyone that we have a patron ad this week from Simon. Ryan, do you want to take it away?
Of course. Geekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at geeklynews.com.
I love how you said, and books.
Yeah.
Like, and this medium I have never heard of before.
Books are very important and super geeky, whether you read the newfangled paper stuff or you get it on your weird computer device handheld thing.
Yeah, just the way you said it, just, man, that was really
I wanted
funny.
To put emphasis on it, and it made it sound like I had no idea what books were.
Emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Exactly.
All right, well, you can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at Joss Plays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/AmoveTV. If you'd like to email the show and let us know how you're finding the cool little indie darling titles or how far you've progressed in Mass Effect Andromeda, I don't know why I stumbled over that word so much, then please do email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.